I get a little bit lonely when you're never coming round.
Okay, so I'm here with Bonnie Tyler, who is the legendary singer behind such hits as, I believe, what was it, Vernal Equinox of the Mind?
Holding
for a supervillain, I think. I don't know. But Bonnie, how are you doing?
I'm fine, yeah. Holding out for a hero. It's a heartache.
Really,
a total eclipse.
I could have sworn. I there was this great song that you sang called Vernal Equinox. Well, anyway, I wanted to actually talk to you before we get into sort of songs that you're known for, about
right.
songs that you're not known for, and albums that you're not known for a change.
Okay.
I wanted to ask you about your last studio album, Wings.
Yeah.
This was interesting because you co-wrote most of the tracks on that particular album.
Yeah, it was the first time.
Yeah, and I was curious about this because you didn't do a lot of songwriting before
no.
that particular album, and I'm wondering what compelled the change to actually composing a lot of these tunes. Did this come from being in the recording industry? Because it was known, if you were a singer in the 60s, that, oh, well, I'm supposed to just go ahead and sing, and we'll let somebody else write the lyrics until the Beatles, of course, changed all that. But what provoked this particular?
Well, to be honest, it was because I broke up with my manager over 21 years.
Really?
After 21 years. And he never really gave me the confidence in my songwriting.
Yeah.
I'm not that great a songwriter, to be honest. I mean, I co-wrote with people who, and I don't do the music part. I just help out with the lyrics, you know what I mean? So, you know, it's kind of, but I did a little of it before. I had some B-sides in the days of B-sides. But no, I sort of gathered a new confidence after I left him. And I had a number one record for 12 weeks in France, because it wasn't one I wrote, unfortunately.
Yeah.
But, the album was very successful. It went gold, you know.
Did your manager say, no, Bonnie, you can't write? I mean, what was the deal? I mean, was it a sort of understanding
between
you two?
No, he always wanted me to... He did want me to write, but he wanted me to write with, famous writers. And I was just like... very nervous about doing that, and you know, I didn't have the confidence to work with people like that, and so when I went to France and I got together with this girl Karine, Paul and Karen, I found it really easy to get on with them, and so it was much easier for me to write. I didn't feel, you know, intimidated at all, you know, because I'm quite a shy person, really. I mean, on stage, I'm in your face, but...
Yeah, you're cowering for me at this moment.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, this idea of, you say you're not much of a songwriter, but then you, again, you have this extraordinary voice, I think. And I would think, I guess what I'm asking, what is the ratio between the actual quality of the writing of the song versus your performance of the particular song? I mean, doesn't it essentially matter? It's kind of like a question I sometimes ask of her cartoonists, where they constantly say to me, oh, well, I wasn't much of a writer and I wasn't much of a drawer, but together, the two come together. I mean, so I'm wondering if you writing songs matters nearly as much as your manager suggested that it did.
No, not really. I've been blessed with having songs sent to me from the top writers in the country, you know, all over the world, like Jim Steinman. I mean, I can't compare to somebody like Steinman. And when he offered me Total Eclipse of the Heart...
Yeah.
I mean, I just cried when I read the lyrics, you know. It was just absolutely amazing when he played it. And Rory Dodd, who sings the turnarounds on there, he sang it by the piano while Jim was playing, you know. And I was just like, oh, my God, this song is for me. I know when, when a song really hits me, because it, like, does something to the back, you know, the hair on the back of your neck. But
it has to do that every time for you in order to keep your level of expectations, then. The back of the neck, your hairs have to stand out, basically.
Yes. Most of the songs that I've had that are big hit records have had that effect, yeah.
Well, I mean, is Steinman really the standard by which you measure all potential song contributions? It's quite a standard to live up to. I mean, have you rejected a lot of songwriters who said, hey, Bonnie, I have got the greatest song for you and you have to sing it? You said, well, no, it's not quite my cup of tea.
Well, yes, I have said no to many, many songs.
Anybody notable? Or?
Steinman himself.
Really?
Yeah.
Which Steinman song was that?
There was one called... I thought the lyrics were too risque for me, you know. I think it was something about sin. I don't like singing about things like that, or the devil, or things like that. I'm not interested, you know.
Why is that?
Well, you know, I believe in God, and I don't want to, you know, give the impression that I don't, you know.
Yeah.
Anyway, you're getting me all nervous, you are. I have turned down quite a few of Jim's songs, yeah, but, you know, everybody sends me songs, and, you know, not just because they're a noted songwriter, it doesn't mean that every song they write is a perfect song, you know. And I have done songs by Desmond Child as well, and had songs of him that I didn't, not all the songs I liked, you know, turned down. But I picked the ones that I really thought, you know, were good. And we did have a very successful album, me and Desmond Child, with, what album was that now?
I listened to like 10 of your albums, so I'm just as equally...
Oh, God, I can't believe I can't remember the name of it. Because in America, it was called Notes from America.
Yeah.
But they changed it then for the UK, you know, to Hide Your Heart.
That's right.
And the title track was a song written by Paul Stanley from Kiss.
Yeah.
And Desmond, no?
Huh. Going back to Wings, I actually wanted to talk about Crying in Berlin.
Yeah.
This song, of all of the songs that I've listened to of yours, sounds the most like a James Bond song. And I do know... that at least the Hindustan Times reported in 2006 that the only thing that could actually break your retirement was recording a James Bond theme of some sort. I'm wondering if you've considered actually approaching the Bond producers to sing a song, just as the same way as you actually called up and contacted Steinman and said, hey, I want you to go ahead and produce this particular album.
It just happened. They asked me, would I like to do a song?
Yeah.
And they sent me the song, Never Say Never, right?
Oh, yeah.
And... I listened to it and I thought, oh, shit, you know, I don't like it,
yeah.
You know.
It is the one of the weakest
of all
the Bond films.
I really would die to do a James Bond song, you know, but I couldn't do it, you know, my heart wouldn't have been in it, and I had to turn it down. I mean, how many people turn down a Bond song, I don't know, but I turned it down because I didn't like it. And I was proved right because I think out of all the songs, I can't even remember.
Never Say Never Again. Yeah, I know.
I don't remember. It didn't appeal to me at all, so I turned it down. And that's the only regret that I have. But
It wasn't actually an official Bond movie, technically speaking, because it was actually produced outside the Broccoli camp. So I think you're on safe ground, actually. But
it was in the Bond movie.
It was a Bond movie, but it wasn't an official under the Albert Broccoli camp. Because that was a Sean Connery once over, because it was also Thunderball Revisited with that.
Whatever. I got offered one and I turned it down.
Did you consider reapproaching them and saying, hey, I would love to do a James Bond song, but this one doesn't cut it. Can I bring in one of these many songwriters who are sending me songs? Did you try that tactic?
No, I didn't, but you just gave me a good idea.
I also wanted to ask you about Heartstrings, your 2003 album.
I love making that album.
Yeah, and I'm quite fond of it, too. It's composed entirely of cover songs that you did with the Prague Philharmonic.
Yeah.
But one thing that strikes me about that particular album is that many of the songs you did came from major male recording artists.
Yeah,
REM, Bruce Springsteen, U2, Tom Petty, Lennon McCartney. Yeah. And I know this idea came from EMI, but part of me listening to this was saying, well, you know, I'm wondering if she's trying to level the gender divide, because taking the power a little bit away from all these, you know, I mean, obviously you've been compared to Rod Stewart throughout your career, but I mean, I was wondering if for this particular album, this was an effort to sort of say, okay, you know, guess what? I can do it just as well as you.
No, it was nothing to do with the gender thing, but I tell you, it was EMI's idea that I put 13 tracks together, but they didn't choose the tracks. I chose the tracks.
Uh-huh.
The idea of doing an album full of rock classics was their idea, with the Prague Philharmonic Orchestra plus my band. And, you know, that really appealed to me. It was great to do these songs. But, you know, I think probably the reason why I didn't cover any songs, big favorite songs of myself, didn't cover any of the biggest favorite songs that were done by females, were because they were like songs that were recorded by Tina Turner, Janis Joplin, and to be honest, I couldn't top that, you know. But to do men's songs, it was a complete difference, so I felt easier about doing that. than virtually saying, oh, look, listen to me, I could do better than Tina Turner or Janis Joplin. It just wasn't on, you know.
But it's not necessarily doing better. It's a matter of having a different take. I mean, this is why we listen to cover songs. That's an interesting take. Just as the Dan Band's take of Total Eclipse is rather interesting. You know, this makes me want to ask you about what the song selection process is for each particular album. I mean, does this come from the producer? If Steinman was on board, did he pick the particular songs?
He wasn't on board. No, I tell you.
Not for this one, but I mean, you know, is it, when do you give it to the producer? When do you actually choose the songs?
Well, when I worked with Jim way back in 1981, I think we started, and the album came out in 83, we were like, he wanted to meet me, so I went to his apartment and I met him, and we were playing. I took some demos that I'd been given and saved up over the you know, a year or so that I'd had an idea that I wanted to do. And he played me some tracks as well. But then I went away for 3 weeks, and then he came back. He called me back, and he'd written Total Eclipse of the Heart for me. And he did write it for me, not like Meatloaf says, he wrote it for him.
Well, yeah, I was going to ask you about that. I mean, based off of that whole fracas between Meatloaf and Steinman and the whole, the lawsuits came later, but I mean, were you aware of that going in and getting Jim on board for this particular album? I mean, there's obviously a history of lawsuits and litigation.
I heard some real funny stories, but, you know, the reason why I asked Jim Steinman to work with me in the first place is because I just finished with RCA Records. I'd been on them for 5 years. And I saw the old Grey Whistle Test, a television program in the UK, and Meatloaf was on there. Actually, Ricky Lee Jones was on the same show. I never forget it. It's just, she knocked me out. But when I heard Meatloaf singing Bat Outta Hell, I thought, this is incredible. This is the kind of music that I know I can sing, you know. And so when I went to Sony, because they were signing me, they asked me, who would I like to work with? And I said, well, I'd love to work with the guy that writes and produces for Meatloaf. And they said, yeah, you know, that's Jim Steinman. He's pretty hot at the moment. You'd be lucky to get him. And I said, well, if you don't ask, you don't get. So we asked him, and then we got together. But no, it was, we'd you know, play each other songs and whatever. But he put the band together, and I think I was very lucky. Max Weinberg on drums, Mee Street Band, and Terry Britton on... his name now? Terry Britton? No, it's not Terry Britton, is it? The keyboard player. Oh, he's going to kill me.
Yeah.
Anyway, Tony Britton, I think it was.
Yeah, that's it.
And on keyboards, we had Rick Derringer on lead guitar, and we had Steve Buslow on bass. It was just great. And I forgot what I was saying now. It was fun making the album anyway.
To take this answer that you've, I'm sure, offered many journalists over the last couple of decades from a slightly different tack, I was curious as to a couple of things. First of all, how demanding was Steinman upon you? I mean, I saw a YouTube video, a three-part YouTube video of you and Steinman, but it seemed to me quite rehearsed, you and him sitting by the piano
with the
camera. And that, to me, I don't think that was the actual rehearsal.
No, it wasn't. I think that was for a show called Ladybirds, was it?
I have no idea. I just found it on YouTube, and I was like, oh, wow, it's actual rehearsal. No, it isn't. It's clearly not, because we were miming the actual final song. But, I mean, to sidestep that and find out what the actual rehearsal process was and how things were perfected, because, well, I mean, there's
Let me tell you then.
Sure.
Let me get a bloody word in edgeways. What happened was, right, he would insist on having 9 different takes, right? So the band were all in the studio. I was in the booth, and we did 9. I sang live the same time as the band. I did it 9 times. And then he takes the reel-to-reel home in the night, and I had like a copy on cassette then it was. And we listen, you know, he's listening in his apartment, I'm listening at the hotel over and over at these 9 different takes to see which take had the best feel to it. And then we'd go in the studio the next day and work on the best take. But then, I mean, he is crazy, man. He uses like 64 tracks, as many people do now. But
he wants
so many versions of the same song. You know,
how many versions were there?
I'd say, well, there was 9 different versions, but, you know, like the vocal, I reckon the first vocal, I'm pretty good in the studio. I'm very on key and I don't go off key. And, you know, to me it all sounded fine, but he wants everything so perfect, you know, that he'll drop in all the time, you know. But that's the way Jim works, so I just go along with it, you know, and he takes forever, but it's worth it in the end.
But how, I mean, give me an example of how this perfectionist streak applied to your vocals. I mean, was it down to a specific phoneme or a specific unit of actually what you were singing or
well,
what?
You know, like, the breathing and things like that, you know. Bonnie, can you hear a breath there? Oh, I've got to breathe, like, you know what I mean? It's really, it is difficult, but it's not so difficult, you know. I mean, I loved working with him.
And all of the tracks on Fast and the Speed of Night are roughly around 7-8 minute opuses.
Yeah,
and
I'm wondering, had to be edited.
They were longer. Was there like some sort of 35-minute version of Total Eclipse or something? Or what?
No, you know, for the single, I think Total Eclipse was like 8 minutes long, and they had to edit it down to 4:20 or 5 minutes
for radio,
something like that. And he was gutted that he had to do that, you know. But it would never have got played, you know. I was still worrying about it being played because it was still a long song for them days, you know. But he got massive airplay. It was number one nearly all over the world, you
yeah,
know.
Yeah, yeah. I actually, to switch tacks a little bit, I wanted to ask you about an incident that I drug up out of the South Wales Evening Post. Apparently, in 2006, you serenaded the retiring pilot on an Air France jet, and most passengers were delighted by this, but apparently a group of Belgians claimed that they were traumatized by your singing. And I love this story, but there was no resolution to it because there were lawsuits, there were legal actions. I mean, did you have to go into court for this? Did you have to stand? Did someone have to actually, an expert witness, have to come in and say, okay, no, this is really why it's traumatic or why it's not traumatic? Or I mean, what happened here? How did this get resolved?
What happened was, right, we were on this flight coming back from Mauritius, and I can't remember what airline it was, but anyway, there was a lot of Belgian people on this flight. And when we got on the flight, I thought, this is strange, you know, the co-pilot, not the guy that was actually flying the plane, but, one of the guys, the pilot, he was going to be retiring, and he was covered in badges, you know. They were having a kind of party, you know what I mean? They were covered in badges, and like his hat was full of them, and all over his jacket.
This
and
is
the
what
girls
retiring
were
pilots do.
The girls were very high spirited. The air hostesses, you know, and they said, "Oh, Bonnie, he's going to be retiring. You know, I mean, would you mind singing Total Eclipse of the Heart to him?" So I only sang like about 3 lines or something like that, you know, and everybody was like, it was great, you know, but I think the Belgians were like trying to get some money back or something, I don't know. I didn't sing like they said over the mic or anything like that.
Yeah.
So you know, it was just like as I was coming on the plane. You know,
was the lawsuit dropped? Was it settled?
I never heard anything else about
really?
It.
Really?
Yeah.
I have to investigate this or something. I had a question because I had noted, and this actually is related somewhat to something I'm not sure if you heard about Noel Gallagher recently.
No.
He was in Canada, and this guy basically pushed him in the back and attacked him on stage.
Yeah.
This made me bring to mind, I discovered that in 2001, a 15-year-old Australian fan showed up at your doorstep and claimed to be your daughter.
Yeah.
And I'm wondering what you do to keep up this buffer zone between your, you know, your own personal life and some of the kind of crazed fans who come out. I mean, it's got to be difficult being you, not being able to walk out into the streets all the time, or is this an issue really?
No, not in New York, it isn't an issue at all.
Well, don't care here.
Yeah, no, it's great. You know, I did B.B. King's the other night. We had such a great night. But anyway, going back to the, you know, like over the top fans, I suppose. This young girl, she had even forged her sister's passport, right? And they didn't. Yeah, she came over. She was too young, you know.
Yeah.
She came over, and my mother's house she went to, and my mother and father were quite old then, you know what I mean? They passed on, bless them. But They went, in fact, they went to my mother's neighbor, which was a very old lady, and she was saying, I want to see Bonnie Tyler. And she said, oh, no, her mother lives across the road and whatever. So anyway, my mother, being a nice woman, she said, oh, you know, I'll give you a signed picture. And
yeah.
So she gave her a picture and everything like that. But I was at a barbecue then, right? And I don't know how she knew that I was there, but she was like hovering around the back of the barbecue. You know, she must have been following me or something. But she thought that I was her mother and that I had given her away.
Yeah.
It's very sad, really, you know. But because she was so young as well, you know, I had to call the police and yeah. they had to deport her, you know, and they found out then she'd... she had forged her sister's passport, and I don't know how she had the money, and, you know, I don't know. She was only, like, 15.
Yeah.
And she always used to send me, like, Mother's Day presents, and I still got another girl now in Germany. She wants me to adopt her all the time, you know. She sends me these letters that she wants to be my security guard and whatever, you know. But one time she turned up at my house, right? She was hammering on the door like
wow.
absolute crazy, you know. And it's quite frightening, you know.
Do you answer all of your letters? What do you do for something like this?
No, I have a fan club, obviously. Yeah.
I got it.
Yeah, and... you know, I sign all the cards personally, and I sign them to the fan club.
How many cards do you generally sign in, like, one day? Or do you have, like, a certain signing session?
Well, I tell you what, in BB King's the other night, I must have signed about 400.
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah, I came off stage, and I was signing for about another 2 hours, yeah.
I wanted to ask you also about the break that you took between studio albums between 1998 and 2003. I read a number of articles, and I saw that you were constantly being dredged out of retirement, or you made the claim that you were in retirement or not in retirement, and
yeah,
I'm wondering...
I've never been retired.
Never been in retirement.
No, the thing is with me, right, I'm a live artist. I'm always away somewhere on some stage. You know, I don't release albums all the time. You don't have to... you know, be in the charts to be, you know, enjoying this life of, you know, it's been a great journey.
Yeah.
And of course, there are times when I don't release records, but I'm still doing live work. I've been so busy this year, it's unbelievable. I mean, I'm 57 and I'm getting more work than ever, you know, it's crazy.
How many days a year do you do gigs?
Well, I've never really counted, but, you know, like, I'm out at least, like, twice a week, or you know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's crazy.
So, essentially, like, maybe 100 dates a year, what you would say, or something like that? Or
I don't know. You'd have to ask Mac Davis. He's my manager. Yeah, like.
Speaking of albums coming out, I mean, you have 20 greatest hits compilations, I believe, over the last 20 years. I mean, the Bonnie Tyler greatest
hits.
But
I keep...
The Total Eclipse Anthology, From the Heart, Bonnie Tyler greatest hits.
But it's
the comeback
always the
single
idea
collection.
From record companies. They always say, you know, I mean, I'm sick of having compilation albums,
yeah.
you know. But even now, they, you know, like next week in the UK, they're releasing Faster Than the Speed of Night again. And it's like, oh, give me a break, you know. Because it's... They do this like free thing now. They give it away to the newspaper, and so the Daily Mail are going to be doing that. I think it's next week or the week after. But I've just recorded nude stuff, and it's completely new. It's great, and it went down a storm in the last few shows that I've only done them. In the last two shows, they're brand new, you know, and they go down a storm. Yeah.
Who's the producer on this?
Well, I've done demos of them so far. So
okay.
It's by you wouldn't know him. It's my sound guy, Tom, and they are fabulous. I mean, really fantastic, and they went down a storm. So the new album will probably be out. Like, it won't be out before next year, that's
yeah,
for sure.
Yeah.
But I want all new stuff, you know, and I got some great songs.
How many demos, I mean, do you have a home studio set up where you test out the demos before you actually go into a studio proper?
No, I just normally stick them in the car or whatever, wherever I am, in a plane and whatever, put them down on the, you know.
Yeah.
But, I mean, I have a lot of songs sent to me that are completely not suitable for me, you know. But these, oh, they are right up my street.
I had a technical question for you. In 2001, you expressed considerable enthusiasm to The Independent about your Scion SMX. You said that you stored all your personal information.
You know.
Oh, you don't have one? I mean, you don't have a replacement technological device for this?
No, I've got the BlackBerry phone now. It has everything on there, isn't it?
It's not. But it doesn't. You had a recording of your mother's voice on the Scion.
Yeah, I know.
You can't get that.
Yeah, but the thing is, I mean, if anybody's got a Scion 3C out there, please, if you want to sell it, I'd love it.
You can probably get one at eBay or something.
I've tried.
Really?
I've really tried.
I'll have to hook you up with some geeks.
You know, I've got so many discs, right, with stuff backed up on, right, that I could use, you know. And the thing is conked out, you know. And so I had to get something new, you know. So then I had a HP.
Do you have an iPod? Or?
Yes, I have an iPod.
What's on your iPod?
I play a lot of Believe It or Not. Country as well. Uh-huh. I love to listen to country. I was in Canada the other day, right? And CMTV was on. Mm-hmm. I really enjoyed it, you know. But I love Duffy. Do you know Duffy? Yeah, she's been number one over here, I'm sure.
Okay.
Begging You for Mercy. Begging you for mercy.
Okay.
Why don't you release me? I love her album.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, Rock Fairy.
Okay, I'll have to listen to her
fantastic.
More closely.
Fantastic. Oh, she's great. She's
well, this
really
is
good.
This is interesting because you initially were going to go in a more country direction before you looked up Jim Steinman.
Yeah,
so it seems that the circle comes back to haunt you in the present.
I know because I've just, you know, some of the new songs that I just recorded, some of them are really rocky.
Yeah.
One's really bluesy, and one of them is quite country. It's kind of like Shania Twain sort of thing, you know, which also goes down well. It's called Is That Thing Loaded?
I'm curious, what was the last book you read, out of curiosity?
I tend to read, sexier ones.
Romances, basically.
The last one I read was a biography, to be honest. But
which biography?
It was probably a comedian that you don't even know. Les Dawson.
Les Dawson, the British comedian.
Yeah. I read that last. But I'm just trying to think. The author of this of the book that I read just before that, and it's just fantastic. It's gone out of my head. I'll think of it in a minute.
Do you read a lot of books while waiting?
No, don't read a lot of books. No, I tend to have so much work to catch up on, right? And, you know, I'm hopeless getting back to emails and things like that because, you know, I don't read an awful lot of books, no. Mm. I love to do Sudoku and planes.
Got it.
Yeah.
I wanted to give you an opportunity because you claimed in a 2006 New Zealand interview, you wouldn't know it, but I'm very good at telling jokes. Okay, so tell me a good joke right now.
Well, I think all my jokes are a bit risque for a joke,
you could do it here.
Oh.
It's all right.
Okay, then. Ernie and Ethel have been married for 50 years. All of a sudden, Ernie dies, and they didn't have many friends. And so Ethel said to herself, you know, well, here we are, Ernie, all alone once again. All I've got is this little bowl of ashes. And she said, do you remember, Ernie, I always wanted you to buy me diamonds. And you said, what do you want diamonds for? Well, she said, Ernie, I'm going to buy myself the biggest diamond out of the insurance. And another thing, she said, Ernie, do you remember, she said, I always wanted you to buy me a fur coat. And you said, what do you want a fur coat for? Well, she said, Ernie, I'm going to buy myself a beautiful fur coat. And do you remember, Ernie, she said, there's one thing that you always wanted. Do you remember that blowjob you always wanted? Well, here it is.
That's a good. Do you tell jokes on stage between songs or anything?
No. I tell them at dinner afterwards with my band.
Interesting. I wanted to also ask you, you have come out and you say that Botox is a great idea.
Oh, God, I've been having it for... First time I had it was in New York, and that was must be 14 years ago.
Huh. I mean, I'm wondering, though, I mean, because I know you've also come out against ageism. You've done a few, you've come out to support causes that are going against ageism and the like. And I'm wondering, you know, this notion of physical appearance.
But it's nothing to do with the look. And it is for me. I mean, I'm on stage and I have to, I mean, I wish I could do something about my weight, right? Yeah. Because, I mean, I am slightly overweight, but, you know, facially, I can do something about it. I can have Botox, and I swear by it. I have it 3 times a year.
But who cares?
Sometimes twice a year. I don't care. I don't care.
You were on an Atkins diet, I know, at one point.
I was on an Atkins diet, and I must say, I did lose 16 pounds, and I kept it off for about 5 years. But bloody hell, when you put it back on, you put it back on. Anyway, you know, I could stick up for people working, at an older age, because I'm older and I'm in, you know, I'm working all the time. I'm 57 and I really got the energy of a 25-year-old, you know, and people have. And, you know, I mean, it's unfair that people, especially I think in the UK, that they have to, the ageism is, you know, they're getting thrown out of the jobs and they know the work much better than half of the young people.
But, I mean, isn't it troubling because you observed the shift? You've actually observed several shifts in the music industry over the course of your career.
Yeah.
I mean, to music videos where suddenly it's not necessarily about the music. Mm. It's actually about how you look on a television screen.
Well, if you're a new artist, I think it is something to do with how you look. But for me, I never relied on my looks. It was always my voice because, I mean, come on, you know, I'm not a spring chicken, and I never was very glamorous or anything, even when I was young, you know what I mean? It was all down to the voice. But I think these days they are more, you know, like everybody looks the same, don't they? You know, they've all got like hot pants on and, you know, like beautiful figures. Like, I would think, how the hell can they keep, you know, bodies like that when you're in this business, you're out for lunch, you're out for dinner, you're eating and drinking all the time.
Yeah.
I don't know how they do it.
Yeah.
I really don't, but
well,
I enjoy
starvation and water, I presume, you know.
Well, stop that for a laugh. I like my, you know, like when I go on stage, I'm always sober. Right? I never drink before I go on stage. But when I come off, I like to drink, I like to eat, you know, I like my life.
But I'm wondering, was the Botox decision on your part, was this because of the performance or because of other factors? I mean, why?
No, because I didn't like, I had 2 lines running up in my forehead, and I thought, I've heard about this Botox. I think I'll go along, and I had it, and I was amazed. It takes 11 days to kick in, right?
Yeah.
Not that you need it, because you've got a face like a baby's bum.
Look at this. I'm getting wrinkles, I assure you.
No, it's absolutely brilliant. You know, I always have to have the cream on first, though. I'm not one of these people that can not have the cream that sort of it takes away the pain.
Yeah.
You know, so I leave that on for a good 40 minutes before I have it done. Otherwise, I can't stand it. And then I squeeze a cushion so hard so that it doesn't hurt. Because it does hurt. But it's worth it. No pain, no gain.
But you also alluded to this manager who you had. Was physical appearance one of the factors that you dealt with in terms of videos or performances or how you looked in front of the camera?
I always hated making videos. I was nominated for a best video with Total Eclipse of the Heart.
Yeah.
But, I used to find them a nightmare, an absolute nightmare. Because, you know, I don't mind, like, being on the stage, you know, singing. I love to be on the stage performing. But I am not, I'm not very good having even photo shoots, you know. You know, like some girls, they can just do all this and they look fabulous. I dread photo shoots and videos. But I had to do it in, you know, like in the 80s because it was very much, you know, like, I mean, Total Eclipse of the Heart was always being played on MTV. They don't play so many now, though, do they?
No, MTV is pretty much all programming and no videos. Yeah. Now, actually, you're going to go to YouTube. And actually, the videos have become better, I think, because now everybody wants to stand out on YouTube. So that's quite an interesting idea.
I never watch myself when somebody puts me on YouTube or something. Oh, I've seen a few crazies doing Holding Out for a Hero in their bedroom, though. That's quite funny.
I'm curious. I mean, you've reached a pretty comfortable position, I would argue, in your career. And I'm wondering where the line between, say, art and commerce is with you. I mean, Wings, you co-wrote the songs. I think it had a completely different sound from your other albums, even with Jim Steinman.
It wasn't... It wasn't well produced. I think Wings wasn't, but I love the production on Heartstrings, with the Prague Philharmonic Orchestra, whatever. But I've forgotten the question.
Well, the question was largely, well, why not do more independent albums or albums that are a little bit more artistic as opposed to playing for, you know, the crowd and keeping the money coming in, or it's doing something almost to supplement the endless...
I would love to do a blues album, right? Because I love singing the blues. And I do two blues songs in my show when it goes down a storm. I love singing the blues. But when I suggested that to the record company, it's like, oh, no, that don't sell. And, you know, and so if they're not going to be behind it, you know, I don't see the point in doing it, you know.
Have you considered setting up, going with an independent label or trying another?
Well, I'm not on a label at the moment, so yes, yeah.
Because then you could do
In fact, I'm going to see a record company tomorrow.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Gotcha. I mean, on the subject of blues, I'm wondering if you have ever tried to contact John Fogerty. I think you and him could do an incredible duet together.
That would be great.
Huh. Mm. Are there any artists you have contacted for a duet that never panned out or you would love to sing with?
I did ask Brian Adams, and he was interested, but he said it wasn't the right time. But, maybe he just said that. I don't know, you know. But, I mean, I'd love to do a duet with him, you know. Love to do one with Duffy. She's great. I love her.
Have you considered, for example, on this independent question, going directly to the internet? I mean, a lot of that seems to be the wave of the present, so to speak.
Well, I've got a meeting tomorrow with Sony Records to see how that goes, and if not, I might take that route. You know,
You can just go ahead and go straight to the people and maybe produce something and completely surprise them. I'm wondering if this has been a kind of ongoing question for you.
Yeah, well, I'd be more able to do it then probably, because then they wouldn't. You know, they wouldn't have the record company butting in and saying, but we don't want that kind of music.
Well, Bonnie, I know you have to go, but it was a pleasure chatting with you. Thank you so much.
Oh, thank you, Ed.
All right, thanks.
Oh. Love you anymore. Golden days before they your baby won't be in.